From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello, guys, and welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast here on a Thursday afternoon here at Frog and Firkin. Every home game before or on Thursdays, we are going to do a live podcast here at Frog and Firkin. We've already addressed the wonderful folks here sitting down, enjoying a cold one or eating some fries or pizza here at Frog and Firkin. And I am Justin Spears with the Wildcast podcast. And joined here is sports editor Ryan Finley and Arizona football beat writer Michael Lev. Hello, guys. Happy Thursday to you all.
What's going on, Justin?
I'm a big, and others? I'm a big fan of Frog and Firkin at noon on a Thursday. This is nice. Do we have to go back to work later?
Depends.
You're the boss, man.
It's up to you.
You tell us.
You're the one that makes all the calls. So Arizona is 0-2, guys. First time in 37 years the Wildcats are 0-2. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Ryan, we've talked about this, right. And you've also talked to Greg Hansen about this. What are your overall thoughts on this? I mean, you've seen Arizona football enough to know that this isn't a good start for
no,
the Wildcats.
No. It's the worst possible start. But that said, I mean, let's not lose our heads here. You know, they're 0-2. Nothing, I don't think, of consequence has been lost yet.
Sure.
This is not a team that was going to win a national championship. I think we all kind of agreed on that. Right now, I mean, they're playing to win the Pac-12 South. And whether or not you go 2-0 or 0-2 in Pac-12 play doesn't really affect your chances of winning your division. So in that regard, you know, in a vacuum, they've lost nothing yet. The bad part is through two games here, you know, future performance, past performance is indicative of future results when it comes to football. We've seen a lot of disturbing trends that if they carry on,
sure.
I mean, makes this a 3 or 4 win team. I know Michael disagrees with me, though. You think that they have lost something.
They have lost something, yes. Now, of course, in the standings in the Pac-12, going 0-2 in the non-con doesn't matter, right? But something has been lost these first two games, and that's the buzz. When Kevin Sumlin came here and teamed up with Khalil Tate, like everyone was super excited about the possibilities. Now, I mean, we're looking at the prospect of a half-full stadium for an FCS opponent,
right?
In a game that, you know, is buried on the Pac-12 network at 8 o'clock on Saturday night after all the good, quote-unquote, good games have been played,
right?
I mean, you guys know what this town is like. People are fickle when it comes to the football team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, basketball has kind of been a constant for the last, what, 30 years or so? Mm-hmm. But football enthusiasm kind of goes up and down depending on how the team performs. Mm-hmm. And they obviously haven't performed the first two games. And not only that, but, I mean, the game against Houston was over at halftime.
Yeah.
And people were literally leaving the press box to go elsewhere and probably were tuning out on TV as well. So to me, that is what has been lost in these first 2 weeks.
And Ryan, you bring up a good point. I mean, 0-2 in the non-conference slate, I mean, they're still tied for first place in the Pac-12 South because USC lost to Stanford.
Right.
But, you know, looking forward, and, you know, we talked about, you know, it's okay because Greg Hansen brought up a fun story when you guys did your podcast the other day. In 1981, when they started 0-2, that was the last time, mm-hmm. What did they do a couple weeks later? They went on to beat USC at USC, which is the number one team in the country. Then a few weeks later, they went to Notre Dame and beat Notre Dame. And from what was looking like it was going to be, according to Greg Hansen, a crummy team,
right.
It ended up being a pretty successful season for Arizona that year.
Right. And you know, I think that there's reason to be optimistic here. I feel like I'm the optimist today. This is strange. I think there's reason to be optimistic, though. Obviously, you know, they play Southern Utah at the stadium Saturday at 8 p.m. Southern Utah is a team that they should beat. They play at Oregon State a week after that. Oregon State is a team that they should beat. They are healthier now than they've been at any point all year. They've got
We think.
They've got their starting left tackle, Laith Freck, back, which can only help
Huge.
Khalil Tate. Again, I'm not sure they're as bad as they've looked the previous 2 weeks, and I think that it's premature to sort of, I don't know, rule out the season at this point. But I also, like Michael said, I'm aware of how fickle Arizona fans can be. And Justin, you'll maybe agree with me here. You're a Tucson guy.
Sure.
I think that they're perpetual optimists when it comes to basketball and perpetual pessimists when it comes to football.
Like, yeah.
Right? If the basketball team's losing at halftime at McHale Center, there's a bunch of people willing them back into the game.
They right? all stand up right, and start right. clapping. And...
Right, right. If the football team is losing at halftime, fans go home. Yep. Or if the football team is winning at halftime, people go, ah, watch them screw this up. Right? I don't know why that is. But it is. And to give fans reasons not to go to the stadium, to give people reasons not to buy into whatever Kevin Sumlin is selling, is a really terrible way to start the 2018 season.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not sure this is a team that any of us thought was going to go 11-1, but I'm not sure any of us thought they'd go 0-2 to start the season either.
Just to be clear, I mean, the season is not over by right. any stretch of
no,
the imagination.
No.
They still can turn things around, but... Several things have to happen, right? The offensive line has to come together, like the addition of Lathe Freck, moving some parts around. That all has to click. And, I mean, to me, the line's performance has to improve by at least 50%, let's say. Defensively, they've been pretty bad the first two games.
Yeah.
Okay against BYU, except for basically one quarter, but it was a really bad quarter. And then, I mean, they were just kind of run out of the building at Houston. Getting some guys back will help. They've also got some guys banged up along the defensive line. I'm concerned about the line play on both sides. But bigger than anything else is, you know, when is Khalil Tate going to get his mojo back?
Right.
Right?
Right.
Like, I know you and Greg talked about this quite extensively on your podcast the other day, and everybody should listen to that one because it was really good. But something is amiss. Mm-hmm. With what's going on with Khalil. I don't know if it's just a bad match with the offensive coordinator and the system that he wants to operate.
Right.
I don't know if it's just the injury factor. I don't know if it's the game plan. I don't know if there's something going on in Khalil's head where he's got some ideas about how he should play mm-hmm. compared to how he used to play. And I just haven't really seen that spark from Khalil. I saw it yeah. a little bit in the fourth quarter against Houston. I think we talked about this the other day, Justin. Like he ran for a first down around the edge, and he tried to score from the goal line. Which, I mean, those to me are encouraging signs. We need to see more of that. We need to see Khalil Tate sprinting down the field against Southern Utah, stomping as like he sort of like when he celebrates a touchdown, he kind of stomps on the ground. We need to see that back from Khalil, or nothing else really matters.
Well, and so much of this to me though comes back to his health, right? And Michael, you can explain this. You were there, but you know he basically falls down, grabs his leg in the first half of Saturday's game as he's you know turns around to his sideline, taps his helmet, which is the universal sign for
get me out of here.
He stays in and is clearly limited. And then when you talk after the game, Kevin Sumlin goes, he talked to me and said he wouldn't be running the football, basically. And Khalil Tate goes, what do you mean my leg feels fine? Now, some of this is just standard lie-to-the-media gamesmanship that every coach in America does if given the opportunity. But, I mean, neither of those stories are true. You know, we were tracking Khalil Tate, or Greg Hansen was. I mean, Khalil Tate basically went from the huddle to the sideline to the huddle to the sideline throughout the first half. What is going on there? I mean, is it possible that the coaches think he's capable of more than what he's been doing? I'm just curious.
It was a really weird set of circumstances and a weird sequence, right? So the only play where he could have been hurt was a rush up the middle for about 2 yards.
Right.
You know, Sports Illustrated did this whole breakdown of Khalil's performance so far this season, and they isolated on this moment, like right before he cut up the middle where it looked like his ankle turned. Mm-hmm. And then he did get tackled kind of in the pile, okay? So you're like, okay, there's the injury. But then on the very next play, which I think it was like 3rd and 8 or whatever it was, he got flushed out of the pocket. He ran almost all the way over to the left sideline, threw off one leg, like a beautiful pass down the field
right.
to Sean Poindexter for a first down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if he got hurt on the play right before that, how could he do that? Mm-hmm. Maybe he, I don't, I, you know,
well, you look
it, it's all, it also could be adrenaline too, just because he's in the game
it
moment.
It could be when he went down, which was two plays later,
right?
On his own, I thought like he like tore his Achilles
yep.
by the way he went down. Mm-hmm. Then I was watching him getting taped, and it wasn't just the ankle, it was also kind of the calf. So I thought maybe he pulled a calf muscle, mm-hmm. you know, something of that nature. not just an ankle sprain, but they kept saying ankle. They don't provide an injury report or a lot of injury details, so we don't know exactly what's going on. And as I said to you earlier, it is impossible to know how much pain he was in, what was going through his head. But it was all just very strange
and
to
this
me.
Isn't the
and,
first
then,
time.
And then, finally, sorry, second and third quarters, totally limited. And then the fourth quarter, he kind of looked fine.
Yeah.
So really hard to tell what's going on there.
And I'm sorry to have interrupted you there, okay. Michael, but what's telling and a little concerning to me is that this isn't really the first time that's happened. And if we look back at last year's ASU game, there was some sort of post-game intrigue as to when his shoulder injury actually happened. Rich Rod angrily said it didn't happen when we said it did. There's some concern as to whether or not he could go back in. He attempted, the game was in the bag at halftime.
They were on pace to win by four touchdowns.
Right. And then he comes out, ASU rallies back, and he kind of goes, well, okay, I'll play. And then he comes back in and struggles, and I believe then exits the game again. The fact that people can't get their stories straight, I think really only serves to hurt him. I'm not sure there's Sumlin or going back to last year in Richrod, anybody's doing Khalil Tate any favors by obfuscating whatever injury he has.
Yeah, what's funny about that is that someone said repeatedly on Monday that the communication piece was great. That was like kind of the best part of the whole deal. As we were talking, we were conversing, we were all on the same page. Going back to that ASU first half, Khalil, I rewatched the game, of course, afterward. Khalil banged his left shoulder on a run or a tackle or something earlier, okay? Mm-hmm. It was not that bad. Mm-hmm. But on the end of the half Hail Mary, he got absolutely drilled, full weight of the defender driving him into the ground.
Right.
Then when you saw him come out in the second half, it just looked like his left arm was dangling and he couldn't throw the ball.
We have a photo where, his arm's down like that.
So, when he got hurt exactly, that maybe that's up for dispute, but the fact that he was hurt, I don't think is up for dispute to me. That's totally different. And this whole kind of idea that maybe there's an unwillingness, if that's a word, for him to run right now. I mean, I go back to the Purdue game. He only had 58 rushing yards, but he also ran about 20 times in that game. And I don't recall seeing a lot of sequences where he was kind of dancing out of bounds, which is what I've seen from him at times this year. So I don't know what's going on with him exactly, but I do know that it needs to get turned around or else, Arizona's not going to make a bowl game this year.
Well, and Purdue did a pretty well job of kind of keeping the box stacked and kind of keeping him corralled, where against Houston, you had it in your notes afterwards, the five takeaways. There was a couple plays where it looked like Houston was daring him to run.
Right.
They would give him a 16-yard cushion on a third and eight situations. Come on, run towards us.
Right.
And he wouldn't do it.
Yeah, but
he would just throw it away.
Maybe that was because he was hurt.
Right.
And you know what else happened in that Purdue game? He passed for 302 yards and five touchdowns.
Yeah.
Right?
That is absolutely true.
It seemed like there's this – I know you guys talked about this on your podcast. His record being, 1-6 since October? I mean – they should have won that ASU game, and I think they would have won that ASU game, and I know this is covering old ground, but if they had done things differently at the end of the first half, they get the ball back, their own 45-yard line with a minute left and two timeouts, and then they basically ran the clock down to 14 seconds, not trying to score. Then Khalil gets hurt. And then, he put them in the lead in the Purdue game, right? And then the defense, gives up the winning touchdown easily. There was a couple of different plays where they could have gotten the ball back, and they end up winning that game. And they only lost to BYU by 5.
Right.
And, again, the offense never got the ball back. So, people don't like that stat about quarterback wins for a reason. But I also understand where you're coming from. The last time they won a football game, Justin, was November 11th against Oregon State.
Wow.
Been a while.
Wow.
It's been a while relative to the, let's say, number of column inches and amount of ink spilled over Khalil Tate during that time, right?
Tell me about it.
and look, he's a dynamic player. Even with the struggles that he's had, I still think that he is as talented as any quarterback Arizona's ever had. And that's why, if we're looking at sort of what's going on and what might happen the rest of the way, I'm willing to sit here and bet cautiously that Khalil Tate in Arizona will turn it around and be, at the very least, some semblance of who we thought they were going to be.
And that's if both sides can come together and find a middle ground of comfort between installing the new system, the types of reads that he needs to make, yet also mixing in some of the old stuff that he was doing.
Right.
Let me bring up something to you guys. So remember, all throughout, since spring, Kevin, someone's been saying, like, Khalil is a really inexperienced quarterback. He's only played 7 or 8 games or 9, whatever. Mm-hmm. He kept saying he had like 9 starts, I think, coming into this year. And we all thought that that was kind of like, you know, he's downplaying it a little bit. He doesn't want Khalil's ego to get out of control, etc. Maybe that was actually a reflection of what he was seeing on the practice field.
Yeah.
He's like, you know what? This guy's super talented, but he's super raw. Mm-hmm. And he didn't do many or any of the things we need him to do in the previous offense, which, you know, I know what Khalil said about not wanting to run the triple option, but basically they were running a form of the option last year.
Right.
Now he's dropping back. He's having to read the whole field. It's a totally different thing. So maybe what Kevin was actually saying was what he was seeing.
Is that the first Michael Lev conspiracy theory of the season right there? That Khalil Tate is just simply raw and they needed to polish up his passing, so this is the focal point for this season? Maybe come back next season.
I haven't had other conspiracy theories.
No.
Maybe we just haven't talked about them on the air.
I have a good conspiracy theory.
Go for it, yeah.
And you'll disagree with me. And we talked a little bit about this yesterday, Justin. I think that it's entirely possible that in the installation of an offense, and that's what this is, it's an entirely new offense, that you're going to have to start off very vanilla, right?
Yeah.
You build in the basics, and then as the season goes on, you add wrinkles and different schemes and things like that. I wonder if they thought that they could get through week 1 and week 2 with a fairly vanilla attack, which is why we saw such a basic playbook against BYU in week 1, why we saw maybe a little bit more last week, but still nothing resembling what, you know, Johnny Manziel did for Kevin Sumlin at Texas A&M. I wonder if they're not building toward, say, a week 5 game with USC to sort of break out everything that they're capable of doing.
Sure.
And that if the coaches are purposely kind of building 1 or 2 steps at a time. You know, I know that in high school that's very common. I know some coaches in college specifically make things very basic starting off the season, especially with a lot of young players.
And a new coach.
Yeah. And then you add more to it. You know, to me, I wonder if they just didn't think they could get by running sort of vanilla stuff the first couple weeks and are surprised that it didn't happen.
I will buy that in the sense that it was out of necessity.
Okay.
Getting injuries on the offensive line, Khalil still not feeling totally comfortable with whatever the offensive system was. But if that was a strategy, I mean, it's a terrible strategy.
That's a bold strategy, Cotton.
Of course, everything is 2020 in hindsight, but I think they desperately wanted to win both of those games.
I'm not saying that they didn't want to win. I'm saying that they showed up with a limited playbook thinking that's all they needed to win.
Mm-hmm.
Man, if that's the case, that's a major blunder.
I mean,
but again, we're just theorizing.
We don't know that to be the case.
Right. I mean, but if that is the case and they want to hold off all the tricks in the book until Pac-12 season, I mean, they got to figure it out soon because, you know, while I thought USC was the clear-cut favorite to win the Pac-12 South or maybe even your team in the Utah Utes, I was very impressed with the Pac-12 South outside of UCLA and Arizona.
How about Colorado?
Colorado ASU. Beating Nebraska.
Yeah.
ASU starting 2-0 with a big win against Michigan State. I mean, the Pac-12 South looks very talented this season, and Arizona could be in trouble.
Well, and a couple of those teams who we thought a month ago, okay, Arizona could beat, right? Colorado being chief among them, ASU.
Yeah.
Two of those teams look much better than they do right now. Right?
Absolutely.
I mean, and all of a sudden those go from, well, yeah, just assume that they'll win that game to maybe not, and then all of a sudden, who can you beat, right?
Sure.
I mean, you know that they can beat Oregon State and Southern Utah here this week and next.
I wouldn't assume they're going to beat Oregon State at this point.
I will assume. I need to see
more from them on Saturday to kind of get to that point.
Because I assume they beat 2-0, and look where they are.
Well, you know what happens when you assume. To me, you know, it's these next two games, obviously, are games that they're going to be favored in. If they continue to play the way they have been, those might be the only two games they're favored in this year. So you need to see improvement, obviously, like Michael said. But, I mean, I think they're going to be 2-2. Heading into a week 5 game against USC, and my goodness, if they could steal one here against a USC team that has not looked very good, all of a sudden you've got a new season. I mean, again, I'm not panicking because they're 0-2, because again, a big win over somebody like a USC 3 weeks from now could change everything.
What do you need to see from them on Saturday night, or what do you want to see from them Saturday night?
60 points.
60 points, huh?
I hate to be that guy, but yeah, Greg Hansen said yesterday, well, you know, just finish with more points than the other guy. No. This is a style points 2 weeks. I think that you need to win big tomorrow, and I think that you need to win big the next week. Now it is about establishing confidence, not only in yourselves if you're players, but establishing some confidence from your fans and showing, you know, showing the 17,000 people or 22,000 people that are going to be there on Saturday that this offense is capable of big things. To me, you need to do it, even if it's against a bad opponent. You need to prove that you're capable of beating the pants off of somebody.
Enough about offense. What about defense, Ryan? You got to see some potential out of this Arizona defense, because where we going into week three now, and we haven't had one sack. Arizona hasn't recorded a sack, and
no takeaways.
And the only tackle for losses are from linebackers. So defensive line needs to get at it. Mm-hmm. I want to see Kylan Wilborn be more active. He's been very quiet the first two games.
Right.
Which, I mean, he had a great season last year. I mean, All American esque from him. I need to see a lot more from Kylan Wilborn. And like you said, Michael, turnovers. Where are the interceptions? Where are the pass breakups? You need to have some kind of momentum on defense to kind of swing this thing, and I don't think it's just going to fall on the offense.
Well, and it's funny. I think the Khalil Tate struggles have really kind of taken much of the attention away from the fair criticism of the defense.
Sure.
I mean, this is a defense. This isn't a new scheme like the offense is. This isn't a new coach. I mean, this is the same thing that they ran under Rich Rod with the same coordinator they had a year ago. And what, 8 or 9 returners, Michael? 9? How many returning starters?
No, a lot of returning starters. Right, I mean, really the only big piece that they lost from the defense was Dan Cruikshank.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, pretty much everybody else is back.
Right. And it's funny, if Khalil Tate was just playing sort of average football, right, if he was just okay, I think all of the attention in this 0-2 start would be on a defense that we thought was going to be much better than it's been. Right now, I mean, nobody's talking about it, but this defense has been, I think, as big a disappointment as Khalil Tate.
You could argue a bigger disappointment just based on the fact, as we've talked about, that they had all those returning starters coming back. It's the third year in the same system, right? I go back to what Kevin Sumlin said heading into the season, continuity and experience, right? That was kind of the basis for his enthusiasm about that side of the ball. And they just haven't gotten the job done the first two games. They've looked, we heard all offseason about all the strength gains that they made in the weight room. That has not translated to the field much, if at all. And the biggest thing to me, besides the guys that they're missing, is just the pass rush.
Right.
Where is the pass rush? I mean, can you remember? I can remember maybe two times in the first two games that the other quarterback got knocked down.
Right.
I mean, that is just simply not good enough. And whether you have to blitz to create that or change personnel or schemes or whatever, I mean, if you cannot rush, it's a huge problem. If you can't stop the run or rush the passer, you pretty much have nothing going.
Yeah.
Well, it comes down to taking chances, I think. If your guys can't get to the quarterback, you need to take chances here and there. And that means maybe mixing up your scheme, giving them a different look, or blitzing.
Send the house. Right?
And we saw a couple of years ago, remember, Arizona was not very good defensively, but God, they brought the house periodically, and they made some big plays. That, to me, I mean, these are two sort of separate conversations. I think offensively, this is a team that needs to sort of grow into this new scheme. Defensively, I think this is a team that may need to change what they're doing, because what they're doing isn't working.
Guys, before we end this podcast, let's do over-unders, okay? I'm going to list off a bunch of numbers for you guys. I want you guys to give me the over-under on this.
For Saturday
against Southern Utah.
Okay.
Only for the Arizona Wildcats.
Of course.
Over-under, 42 points.
Over.
I'll take the over.
Okay. Over-under, 2.5 receptions from the tight ends.
Under.
Really?
I'm from Missouri on this. I mean, you got to show me. Show me. They haven't shown me yet.
Absolutely.
He doesn't throw the tight end any more than Rich Rod did. Nope.
Okay.
Under.
I'm going to take the under also.
I got the over.
I think this is going to...
Kevin Sumlin's going to nudge Noel Mazzone and say, hey, show my boy some love.
Okay, go ahead.
His boys.
All right. Over, under, 1.5 rushing touchdowns for Khalil Tate.
Over. I think, I don't know if this is going to be one of your numbers, but I think this is going to be a game where they unleash the rushing attack.
Okay.
And they're going to, remember a couple times the last couple years they've had like 500 rushing yards. I don't know if they're going to be up in that territory, but I think we're going to see a lot of running from Tate, from Brightwell, from Taylor, from Bam Smith. I think that's going to be a big part of the game plan early, and then when the game gets kind of out of hand, you're going to see them handing the ball off and really trying to get that offensive line into a good rhythm, which is, you know, maybe one of the best things that could come out of this game.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. Like Michael said, I think the key is going to be establishing that run early, and then when you're up big, just run the football.
Absolutely.
Go home, mm-hmm. you know. But I still think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I think it almost has to be.
Mm-hmm. Over under 0.5 sacks for the Arizona Wildcats.
Over.
They finally get a sack.
It's going to happen. Yeah. Plus,
just one?
Well, maybe it could be just one, but they're going to be more aggressive, number one. Number two, if you get ahead, the other team has to pass, and that puts them into vulnerable situations. You should also, you know, there should be a talent disparity in this game, right?
Yes.
Your guys should be able to beat their guys in one-on-one matchups coming off the edge. So, yeah, I think the sacks are going to come.
Okay. Over, under, last one. 1.5 interceptions. I know that's a little high.
Over.
But with Jace Whitaker, Scotty Young back?
Over, for the same reasons Lev just said. I think if Southern Utah gets down, they're going to just try to throw the ball around, and that leads to turnovers. Again, let's know who Southern Utah is here.
The Thunderbirds.
They play in NAU's league. The last time Arizona and NAU played a game worth talking about was like 1962. This is not a game that should be close. I don't care how bad Khalil Tate has played. I don't care what this defense has looked like through 2 weeks. The worst Arizona team in program history should win this game by 20. And this team is much better than that. I mean, this is a team that I think we're looking at like a 60-6 kind of game.
Wow.
So
wow.
Here's the thing, right?
Huge win.
If this happens, you know, the skeptics will say, and we might be among them, like, what does that prove?
Nothing.
You know, you did was beat up on an inferior opponent. Now, the flip side of that, to me, is that they need a performance like that just for confidence, right? Just to kind of remember, oh, yeah, this is what this feels like. And, you know, this is when the offense is clicking, this is what it looks like.
Right.
And, you know, this is the effect that an aggressive ball-hawking defense can have on a game. You know, and then you kind of build from there. You mm-hmm. know, then you go to Oregon State, which is clearly a step up. They trounced Southern Utah last week. You could just easily compare the two. Recent trips to the Pacific Northwest, no matter who the opponent has been, have been disastrous for Arizona. I mean, they just get blown out every time they go up there. So, you know, you do what you need to do in this game, build some confidence, kind of get your groove back, go up to Oregon State the following week, hopefully take care of business, and then, as Ryan said, you got USC coming here in week 5. That's when you really see what this team is capable of.
Okay, the Arizona Wildcats play the Southern Utah Thunderbirds at Arizona Stadium Saturday night at an amazing 8 p.m. kickoff. Michael, I know you love those times.
Yeah, we need to talk. When we're done here, we need to talk deadlines. I hope that's okay.
You know what? It's okay, because the following week, I've got myself a nice 1 p.m. kickoff
in Corvallis.
There's nothing can spoil my mood after that news came out. So.
Well, that would do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Don't forget to download the free Wildcaster app available on the App Store and Google Play, and subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts. For Ryan, for Michael, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.